Welcome back to another titillating episode of Breaking Beltway. I'm your host, Jessica Chasmar, coming to you every Thursday night from the most lovely and corrupt Washington, D.C. Tonight we have a lot of great topics to cover because Mr. Douglas Ernst is in the house once again. Thanks for coming back, Doug.
Thanks for having me.
I had to have you on because my boyfriend has a little bit of a man crush on you. He was so excited that you're going to be back on the show. He thinks you're so smart. But Doug is actually a colleague of mine from the Washington Times. He's joining me tonight via Skype. And actually, you said something to me that I've never heard come out of your mouth, that you were just eating Taco Bell. Is that right?
Yeah, I usually don't, but I wanted to make sure I got here in time for your show, so Doug, I stopped by some fast food.
Doug is definitely the health guru around the office. Everybody always stops by his desk to ask what he's eating and what his exercise regimen is, so it was kind of funny to hear that you had to munch down some Taco Bell, but I appreciate you being fast for us, so. But I wanted to start tonight's podcast talking a little bit about this horribly put upon North Texas teenager. His name is Ethan Couch, and he drove drunk into a crowd of people, killing four of them. And he actually skated a prison sentence because his shrink claimed that he suffered from a completely made-up mental disorder called affluenza, which of course is a derivative of influenza and affluence. And this kid was sentenced to only 10 years probation, and now the families of the victims are trying to sue the hell out of him and his family, because obviously they have some deep pockets. But, you know, this affluenza case, it's made such huge headlines, you know, internationally, because it's like, what the heck? This kid is basically walking away with murder because he has money. And, you know, also, a lot of people are arguing, you know, oh, you know, only the parents are going to suffer because of this, because they have the deep pockets and the kid doesn't. But I think this is a unique case because normally I don't think that parents should be held responsible for the actions of their 16-year-old, and they normally aren't under the law. But my view here is that his parents became complicit the second they hired that shrink to defend him and make up this bogus claim of affluenza. I mean, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, if they want to try and get him off using any means necessary, and that means is coming up with a, you know, a strange excuse, essentially saying, oh, well, we spoiled him so much because we're so rich, that's what led to this, then they become culpable on some level.
Absolutely. I mean, they're basically saying that it's all their fault, you know, so that got him off, but now I guess they're trying to, you know, there are other, you know, four people were killed in this. And now the district attorney, they're trying to revisit it, and they're trying to get jail time for two intoxication assault cases because two people that he hit are critically injured, and one of them can't even move or speak. And their families are seeking out damages as well, but they're also suing for, you know, intoxication assault cases, intoxication insult. And it's just interesting that he got to walk away from the murder trial, for manslaughter or whatever it was, and now they're going to try to get him jailed on intoxication assault.
Right. Well, I mean, it's one of those things where he got off, and any sane person knows that he kind of found a way to play the system. Yeah. So they're just trying to get him for anything that they could come up with. I mean, I personally just hope that they, in the civil cases, bleed the parents dry. Since they wanted to go that route, then it might as well hit them up for as much money as possible.
And it seems to me just crazy that in our society today, you know, when people are constantly crying about rich white people skating the justice system, you know, while poor minorities get the shaft. And well, how is this evidence of anything different than that? You know, how can we claim that we are all seen equally under the law when stories like this break? I mean, affluence is literally what got him away with murder.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's difficult to have faith in the justice system when cases like this come up. You definitely kind of, you know, people like us, I've defended the justice system countless times with people who come up with ridiculous, you know, cases that, oh, it's set up to...
It's,
you know,
skewed, yeah,
absolutely. Or a minority kid to jail or whatever. And then a case like this comes up, and, you know, if this is going to be the new norm where, you know, rich people are going to try and use strange excuses like this, then, it, you know, I can't really defend something like that. I'm not
yeah.
gonna, I can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just hope that, I mean, they're suing for millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it seems to me like, okay, if he suffers from affluenza, then that's clearly the parents' fault. So how are you going to release a minor back into the parents' care that supposedly inflicted this this, you know, mental disorder upon him? If it's his parents' fault, then, you know, it just seems crazy that people wouldn't think the parents would be culpable and that, you know, they would be he would be released back into their care.
Yeah, it's just kind of a sad case all around, and I think it kind of speaks to kind of broader cultural problems going on where nobody wants to take responsibility for their actions. So it doesn't
yeah.
matter whether you're rich or poor, you know, everyone's looking for a way to just, you know, get out of taking responsibility for their behavior.
Absolutely. We'll definitely keep an eye on this. And with that, we're actually going to go to a music break. The song has a bit of a backstory. Doug and I used to work for a startup with Catherine Timpf, my former co-host here at Breaking Beltway, and it was near Christmas time, and we all kind of knew that the startup wasn't going to work, and we kind of knew we were going to lose our jobs. But this song, we played over and over and over again until it drove Kat crazy, but it definitely helped us get through those hard times. This is Smashing Pumpkins with Christmas Time.
Christmas time has come.
And we're back. Oh, I love that song. I love Christmas. I'm not a big Smashing Pumpkins fan, but that song just lulls you into a bit of a submission. La 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 la. I love it. Well, in the last segment, we talked a little bit about affluenza and the lack of young people taking responsibility for their actions. And it's the classic wussification of America argument that conservatives love, and I'm honestly not going to dispute it at all, but in fact, a viral meme was born over the past few days that I think exemplifies what conservatives think of this wussification. Organizing for Action issued this meme on Obama's Twitter account that shows this, like, frail, kind of dorky, asexual, it's Pat type, you know, sitting in his he's sitting in a flannel onesie, and he's sipping a cup of hot cocoa, and the message says, "Wear pajamas, drink hot chocolate, talk about getting health insurance," and the hashtag is Get Talking. Well, conservatives have just, like, totally pounced on this meme, and they photoshopped it to say all sorts of things, and I actually shared a couple of them on my Facebook. One says, "Let's talk about my low testosterone," and another says, "I wish I had a vagina instead of that boring flat spot." And, you know, of course, you know, part of my job is, you know, of course, these are hilarious, and I think they're hilarious, but part of my job is to play devil's advocate. So, Doug, do you think that these kind of, you know, stereotypical, like, gender-based, sexualized jabs from conservatives, do you think that that could alienate them in the long run?
Making fun of this kid?
Yeah, like, these gender-based attacks, I mean, they're everywhere. Even Chris Christie said something about it.
Yeah, I don't really think so. I mean, the left uses the whole ridicule thing, the Saul Alinsky rules for radicals kind of technique,
right,
against us all the time. So when it comes to something, if we're going to use it, then if it's going to be some dorky kid in pajamas, I think that's, I think it's pretty harmless to go that route. Whether it's like football, if you look at sports, in any sort of activity, it's like they're trying to take the testosterone out of it.
Yeah.
You know, with football, it's like, oh, we're all nervous about concussions and we have to change the rules. In baseball, we don't want people colliding at home plate anymore.
Right.
In movies, I don't know, it's just like this endless kind of string of trying to find ways to emasculate men and make them into some sort of weird androgynous David Bowie 1970s-ish type thing. That's just strange.
Yeah, and I think that is Obama as well. I mean, he personifies that. But I also think, like, what does this ad say about the White House, or these kind of ads, what does it say about the White House? Not only conservatives, but how the White House is trying to portray men. I mean, what do we have so far? We have this asexual dude sitting in a onesie, and then we have a couple of party bros doing keg stands. You know, like, how are they portraying men?
Yeah, it's just bizarre all around, and then it's a continuation of, like, I mean, they did the same thing over Thanksgiving. They had a similar type guy where they wanted you to talk about Obamacare over Thanksgiving. So on top of, like, the weird gender stuff, it's like you can't even get away during the holidays from talking about Obamacare.
Right.
No matter when, like, the last thing I want to do over Christmas is have someone approach me in pajamas to talk about Obamacare. It's just kind of freaky and weird.
The way they romanticize this health insurance, it's like, oh, you're sitting by a warm fire in your Snuggie drinking your hot toddies and talking about pre-existing medical conditions. You know, it's so bizarre. Nobody does that.
Yeah, I don't want to have a conversation with some guy crossing his legs in front of a fire about Obamacare. It's just not up my particular alley. I suppose there's guys like that out there, but I'd have a hard time with that one.
And then there's the whole other situation. There's, you know, the group Out to Enroll, which is basically whose sole purpose is to try and get gay people to sign up for Obamacare. So, you know, how they're actually trying to sell Obama to real gay people is hysterical. They made this YouTube video. It's set to the song Let It Snow. It's Christmas themed, but in their words, get enrolled. And it shows a bunch of gay men in their underwear prancing around and provocatively, you know, sucking on candy canes and looking at each other's butts. So that's supposed to get me as a gay man to want to sign up for Obamacare? I mean,
well,
it's insulting.
Again, like, the difference, if this was like a conservative administration, it would just be kind of like a broader kind of plea towards all Americans.
Right.
But Democrats and liberals, they put people into little groups, okay? Women, gay people, minorities. You know, it can never just be a pitch to Americans.
Right.
It's like we have to separate them into these little groups and then, you know, figure out what they're about. And then apparently gay people like to suck on candy canes, so we're going to throw that in there.
Right. They like to stare at each other's butts when they're hanging ornaments on the Christmas tree.
Yeah, they're always playing weird kind of social experiments with people, and it just goes to the micro-targeting that Obama did there during the 2008 and 2012 campaigns, where he was hiring psychologists to try and figure out how to, you know, get into people's heads. It's just a continuation of, like I said, splitting people into groups and dividing them and then going after them.
It's so bizarre because I can't imagine if I were a gay woman or a gay man watching that advertisement and not being insulted by it. Be like, okay, that's what you think of all gay men, that we just stare at each other's butts in our underwear all day? Like, I don't know. I would be insulted as a gay man if I saw that. I don't know. If they were to stereotype
it's
like that.
It's the double standard. If you're liberal, you could say whatever you
want.
Oh,
yeah. They can get away with anything.
Women, minorities. And if it's offensive in any way, it'll be brushed under the rug and forgotten about. And, you know, people will laugh and make excuses for it. But if you were a conservative,
oh man,
and you showed a bunch of gay guys prancing across the screen.
Could you imagine the firestorm that would erupt from that?
Right.
It's so funny that these, you know, no-name models, like, you know, the hot chocolate guy, the pajama boy he's being called. It's so funny that these no-name models, they put themselves up to this. And even, you know, big-name celebrities like Adam Levine from Maroon 5, who have absolutely no shame in selling out their fans and their brand to hawk Obamacare. And I think that Twitchy is pretty brilliant, you know, Michelle Malkin's website that she just sold. I think it's pretty brilliant at following celebrities. But they actually compiled tweets from all of the big names the White House has enlisted to sell Obamacare, and the tweets are virtually identical. There were two tweets that circulated, and one said, "Nothing is more important than our health. Make it your family's top priority and get covered today." And the other said, "Get covered at this moment so you put yourself in the best place for the next moment." Okay, those aren't, like, incredibly original, they're not witty, they're not anything, but they were circulated and copied word for word and tweeted from dozens of verified celebrities on Twitter, and they weren't, like, RT'd, they were their words, you know? But they're word for word identical to everybody else's. I think that really grosses me out, that these people are using their celebrity status to shill for Obamacare.
Yeah, it's definitely a strange situation where, on top of that, they enter kind of like the political arena and they want to push Obamacare, but then if someone asks them, you know, if I survive an Obama drone strike while I'm overseas in the Middle East, does Obamacare cover that? Like, they don't want to have those sorts of conversations.
Yeah.
They don't want to get any sort of pushback whatsoever. And it's like, they want to have their cake and eat it too. It's like, I want to just be able to say whatever I want to say, and my conservative fans or libertarian fans could just shut up about, you know, any of the problems with Obamacare. It's like, well, I would get covered, but the website hasn't worked for 2 months. Or I was covered, but my insurance company dropped me, Adam, so...
I mean, are Americans really that dumb to where they're going to believe George Lopez when he says Obamacare is great and that you should sign up? I mean, do they buy this?
From George Lopez, probably not. Every couple years, he has a television show that comes out that gets canceled after a couple months. But, yeah, probably not from George Lopez. But, I mean, some young people, I guess they're open towards it, and maybe it might get them thinking, oh, maybe I'll check it out. But like I said, the website stinks, and everybody's making fun of it, so in some way it might actually be backfiring on them, because when they eventually see how much it's going to cost them, a lot of people aren't too happy with the cost. It was supposed to be affordable, and it's not so affordable.
Right. This next song that we're going to go into is a Doug pick. It's Scott Weiland. He appeared on Jay Leno a couple years ago singing, what is this song? I forget.
Well, he had a Christmas album a couple years ago, so this is one of them. I had a slew that I sent over to. I think it's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Oh, yeah. He has the voice of an angel. You would never expect it.
Yeah, which is weird. If he would just stay off heroin, I think he'd be good to go.
I think I played Creep on last week's show, so this is perfect. Here is Scott Weiland of the Stone Temple Pilots and Velvet Revolver, right? Is that the...
They have disbanded.
Oh, they did. Okay.
And then the Stone Temple Pilots actually kicked him out of the band, probably because of his drug problem.
Oh, I remember that. Okay, I'm way out of the loop. I'm still in the 90s.
He still has a great voice.
Okay, here it is.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Travel near to us once more. Someday soon we all will be together if the fates allow. Until then,
welcome back to Breaking Beltway. Oh, I'm getting all into the Christmas spirit. That was lovely. Lovely. Now, Doug, okay, you write a blog. It's called the Douglas Ernst Blog. You wrote about this woman, Liz Winstead, who co-writes The Daily Show. Is that right?
She did at one time. I don't think she's involved with them anymore, but that's kind of one of her claim to fame, or I think it was like a launching pad to... I don't know, she's a comedian, so that's just part of her resume, I guess.
And you kind of pissed her off, didn't you? Again.
Well, in April of 2012, I found a video of her. I guess, I don't know, I can't even remember, it's been so long ago, but she has some sort of connection with Planned Parenthood or abortion. She was sharing a story about when she was a kid, she thought that... cooking toys for little girls, it symbolized indentured servitude or something along those lines, which I thought was weird because little kids wouldn't be thinking that.
Right.
They wouldn't think marriage, indentured servitude. So I was like, there must be something else going on with this woman. Why would she say that? And it turns out that when she was 16, the very first time that she had sex, she got pregnant. She went to some sort of religious organization that dealt with abortions, and they said that basically if she had an abortion, she was going to murder her child.
Duh.
And so that's kind of carried over into her adult life, in my opinion. So I wrote this blog saying that, you know, she has to find a way to make it okay in her mind what she did. I didn't pass any judgment off on her, mm-hmm. saying she's an evil person or this or that. I just said this event kind of shaped her life, and she's trying to find a way to make herself okay with it. Mm-hmm. And she found it on Twitter. She sent her Twitter followers after me her drones. Her sister said that she wanted to chop off my man parts, for lack of a better term, and put it in a cast iron skillet or something and watch it explode. And I thought it was all done and over with. And now today they came back. One of her friends showed it to her again today, and it all started back up again, where I'm an evil guy because I tried to psychoanalyze Liz Winstead, the comedian. And apparently I hate all women, and I don't like strong women, which is news to my wife and my mom and my sister. So I hate women, and I apparently hate you too, I guess. That's why I'm doing your show.
I thought it was really funny that Liz kept replying to me, because she doesn't pick up on the sarcasm very well. She thinks that I'm in her camp, because everything I said was really sarcastic, and she was like, yeah! Agreed with everything I said, even though I was being mean.
Yeah, she probably just saw that you were in a stream of people that were calling me a bad, evil person.
Yeah, probably.
Whatever names they were calling me, and was like, oh yes, I've got another one, and you're a woman, so you... Oh, that was the other thing. They said that I was mansplaining things.
Mm-hmm.
So if I disagree with a feminist or someone who's pro-choice, and I'm a man, and instead of explaining things, I'm mansplaining things.
Mm-hmm.
If I suppose if I said that she was womanizing things, or I don't know, if I don't know whatever the opposite would be, I would be a sexist jerk. But apparently, if you're Liz Winstead, you could come up with the word mansplain, and it totally is perfectly fine.
Yeah. I thought that the blog that you wrote on her was really fascinating, just because, you know, some of the points that you made, you know, she didn't want just an abortion, she wanted to be told that it was okay, you know?
Yeah, well, if you go to, and I'm trying to remember here, but if you essentially go to Catholic nuns and you're pregnant, what do you expect them to say?
Right.
You know, they're going to say that you're murdering your child,
right,
if you have an abortion. If you're Liz Winstead and you're 16 years old, you know, I understand that maybe her options were limited, but you would think she would be smart enough to know, like, I'm going to a Catholic organization or a religious organization or whatever it is. This is how they feel about that.
Right.
This is, I don't know. It's kind of bizarre to me that she would take out her anger on, you know, a religious organization for essentially telling her what everyone knows they believe.
She never should have gone to a religious organization hoping that they would tell her, oh yeah, go ahead, you know, have an abortion, you know, nobody will care.
Well, that's the weird thing is, like, I'm not even really talking smack. I'm just saying, like, hey, pretty much common sense, and this is an event that you've carried with you into your adult life. I didn't say you're going to hell, Liz Winstead, mm-hmm. or, you know, your baby's going to haunch you.
But you're a conservative man, so that is what you're saying. Don't you understand that?
Yeah. She and her sister were the ones joking about chopping off parts of my body,
right,
that I need. I wasn't doing that. I was just saying that she's got a lot of anger inside her, which apparently she does.
Yeah. One of the guys that responded, he said something to you. He was like, you had said conservative feminist, and he was like, there's such thing as a conservative feminist? You know, he thought that was just crazy that there's such thing as conservative feminists.
Right, and my response was, and this is something Chris Plant says on his radio show, is that, you know, conservatives don't believe that exterminating half the black population should be called, quote, choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my opinions on abortion are more nuanced than that, but I knew that would get under their skin.
Oh, yeah.
and she, of course, retweeted it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. To me, it's just the whole entire situation is much more complex than she makes it out to be. It's like man versus woman.
Right.
You know, and you're either sexist or you agree with Liz Winstead, I guess. I don't know.
Well, do you even know what she's doing now? I've honestly never even heard of her. But she is, you know, a big deal, apparently.
Right. I think she's a pretty successful comedian. I don't even own a television. I know that sounds weird, but... so I don't don't see her on Comedy Central or whatever, but, you know, just from what I know of her online presence, I think she's fairly popular, and I'm sure she's probably a nice woman. I would be glad to, like, sit down and talk with her one day. I have nothing against her, but apparently if you disagree with someone, you know, a liberal feminist woman who's pro-choice, then that makes you some sort of evil guy.
People are just naturally so mean on Twitter. Like, if Liz was sitting here with the two of us, I can guarantee you we wouldn't be screaming at each other, you know, trading profanity and insults, you know? Twitter just brings out the absolute worst in people, I think.
Yeah, a lot of times they say that I sound like an angry guy, I'm a jerk, this or that. You know, being a jerk is debatable, I guess. Some people might listen to this and think I'm a jerk. But I don't really have any anger. I don't sense any anger coming out of my voice right now. Anytime I'm talking to you, I'm pretty lighthearted about it. I just think they're kind of weird more than anything.
Yeah, yeah. If anything, I think that liberals get pretty angry for no reason at me anyway. But with that, we are going to go to some more Christmas music. We have Sting with I Saw Three Ships and No Doubt's cover of The Vandals with Oi to the World. You are listening to Breaking Beltway.
I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day in the morning. And what was in those ships all three on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day? And what was in those ships all three on Christmas Day in the morning? Our Savior Christ and His Lady on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Our Savior Christ and His Lady on Christmas Day in the morning. Pray will I sail those ships all three on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Pray will they sail those ships all three on Christmas Day in the morning. Or they sail into Bethlehem on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Or they sail into Bethlehem on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the bells on earth shall ring on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the bells on earth shall ring on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the angels in heaven shall sing on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the angels in heaven shall sing on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the souls on earth shall sing on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the souls on earth shall sing on Christmas Day in the morning. And let us all rejoice and be on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And let us all rejoice and be on Christmas Day in the morning.
Travel.
And we're back. You're listening to Breaking Beltway. I'm your host, Jessica Chasmar, here with Douglas Ernst of the Washington Times. Now, Doug, you wrote on your blog a piece about Ben Affleck being picked up to play Batman. And if the choice of Ben Affleck wasn't bad enough, now they want Joaquin Phoenix to play the villain. but you wrote about his interview with Playboy earlier this month. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what he said about Republicans?
Sure. Well, at some point during the interview, he was asked if his politics kind of made it more difficult for fans to buy into his characters. I would argue his bad acting makes it hard for his audience to buy into his characters, but whatever. He basically said, yes, I think it can do that. And he said, for instance, and then he went on to say that when he sees an actor on screen who he knows is a big Republican, he thinks something along the lines of, I probably wouldn't like that person. Mm-hmm. And to me, I thought it was very interesting because when I see someone on screen who I know is liberal, I don't think I wouldn't like that person. I think, you know, if they're a jerk, I think I wouldn't like them. But if I just know someone's liberal, you know, it's just like, whatever. I really don't care.
Right.
It's when they become an activist and start, you know, going forward with this kind of condescending attitude, like, you're stupid, you're a knuckle-dragging conservative who can't put a couple sentences together.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes me kind of upset.
Did he say that? He said something like that?
He said that if he sees a person who's a big Republican, a part of him thinks, quote, I probably wouldn't like this person if I met him, and that we would have different opinions.
Right, right.
So it's just one of those things where it's like, wow, he sees someone, he knows that they're Republican, and he automatically assumes that he wouldn't like them.
So So
he's saying that essentially, we'll just say roughly half of his audience, you know, America's kind of split, for the most part, down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, I wouldn't like you if I met you in real life. Even if you believe that, that's not something you should probably say in interviews about, you know, your potential audience or customers.
I mean, is Ben Affleck really trying to tell us that he's not friends or family with one conservative or Republican that he gets along with and likes? I mean, is that what he's trying to tell? Is he that insulated to where he is constantly surrounded by like-minded people? How boring.
Right. I mean, most people have family members. I have a brother who's not particularly conservative. I love my brother. He's a nice guy. We just happen to disagree on public policy matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have friends of friends who are liberal. I have friends that I grew up with who are atheists and liberals. They're generally nice people, and I get along with them. And, you know, I don't know. It's just weird to me that the first thing that he would think of is, I probably wouldn't like that guy.
Yeah.
Because he likes free markets and limited government and a strong national defense. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. I especially like one quote out of your blog post. It is possible to disagree with someone without being disagreeable.
Right. Just like the conversation, I mean, we agree on a lot of things, but I'm sure there's a few that we disagree on. But we could actually have a conversation like adults, and we don't be disagreeing at each other and call each other names and get into that sort of stuff. But apparently Ben Affleck can't really do that, and he lets his emotions run away with him, where he suddenly doesn't like someone just because, you know, they think tax rates are too high.
What do you think about him playing Batman? Are you going to see it? Like, are you excited about this?
Well, I am a comic nerd.
Right.
And so I'm kind of obligated to see it. I've just, in my mind, I've said, you know what, I'm going to try and give him the benefit of the doubt and walk in there. Because if I go in saying I'm going to hate it, just like he goes in thinking he's probably going to hate Republicans,
right,
then I will. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if I'm just like, you know, F Ben Affleck, he sucks or whatever.
Right.
As soon as I walk into the theater, it's like my mind's going to be looking for something to be upset about. So I'm just going to go in there, clean slate, and trust that the director, Zack Snyder, is going to do a good job. He did a great job with the Superman movie. He did 300, Watchmen. A lot of people don't like that, but I think it's a underrated movie. I think he did a great job.
Do you know when this one's going to come out? Batman?
I want to say summer of 2015.
Well, what do you think about Joaquin Phoenix?
You were the one who informed me of that today towards the end of the day, so I haven't had a chance to really look into it too much. Again, they could put Danny DeVito, make him Batman, and in my mind, I'm going to be like, no, I'm just going to go and try and like this, because when I was a kid, these sorts of movies didn't exist. Right. They were just like a dream, like, wow, I wish these, you know, well, Batman's a little different, but for the most part, comic movies weren't really that popular when I was a kid, so I remember a time where they didn't exist. And so now I'm going to do whatever I can to try and go in with an open mind.
He's a fanboy. All right, Doug, thanks so much for coming back on the show again. It was good having you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And I hope you have a great Christmas. I'm actually not going to see it until next year.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, holidays.
Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
Whatever you celebrate.
Yeah.
Festivus.
Festivus for the rest of us. We're actually going to sign off with some B.B. King and John Popper. This is Backdoor Santa.
Take.